877-365-3636. But please, turn down your radio and no calls to play the name game. No who would you do calls. No calls about rating women. No calls asking when we're coming to your town. And no jokes. That's 1-877-365-3636.
Everybody loves Donna Mike. Everybody loves Donna Mike.
Everybody keep cool. Everybody keep cool. Everybody keep cool. Everybody keep cool.
Stay cool. Stay cool.
Everybody loves Donna Mike.
It's the Don and Mike show, and they'll say what they wish.
Where else would you rather be than right here, right now?
To be Rob Spiewak.
Me.
Hey, the boy over in the corner.
I just want to say, it's been 22 years, Don and Mike. Millions of people haven't bought it.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. Pee Wee Reese and all the ships at sea. They always avoid constipation.
Sure.
Don Geronimo and Mike O'Mara.
Yeah, I wish that was true.
Hey, where's my Elvis packet, Robbie?
Got it standing by for you.
Need the Elvis packets.
Elvis is still dead.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to that in just a moment, but that's our lead story today. Elvis is still dead.
Yes.
Hello, and thank you for listening. Coast to coast, still nationwide, still VFS with Von Darling. Don Geronimo, Mike O'Mara right here. That's why every day we insist on calling it your Cotton Pickin' Dynamite Show.
Lemonade, that cool, refreshing drink.
The smell of Elvis, the smell of death.
Yes, so we've got some Elvis face cloths in here.
The smell of radio station, WJFK, that's our home radio station. And, of course, man without a spine, Ken Stevens.
Yay!
Face covered with hideous skin tags, six-car garage.
He's a work of art, man.
How come Elvis is dead and Ken is still alive?
It's no justice, Don.
That's the riddle of today's show. Ken is the general manager here. His number two, and I do mean number two, Jeremy Coleman, as we speak now, the program director, he's in a little ball underneath his desk in the fetal position.
Absolutely.
Then you have, I guess he would be like Priscilla.
Yeah, he's Scylla.
He would be Ken's Scylla. Then you have Big Daddy Mel, ruling the world from New York City. Oh, Buddha, let me rub on those couplings for good luck. And, of course, our agent, Junior Soprano in Chicago. And here's the chain of command around here. Now, I know many jurisdictions, school are back. School is back.
School are back.
So, let me take this opportunity to ask all your soccer moms to move Junior and Missy way to the back of the room and stand back, because I've just whipped it out.
What are that on your thing?
School are back, Mike. That, of course, that is my, what did you call that? What were those yellow things? Those orange? No, the orange things that crossing guards used to wear, like you were in safety patrol?
Sashes. Yeah, sash, I guess.
But it wasn't so much a belt, because it would actually go over your shoulder.
It was reflective tape that you wore to identify yourself as a crossing guard.
Safety patrol. Anyway, that's what I've got on today, and I've just whipped it out. Another perfectly executed opening this big-time Hit Your Market radio show.
I'm having a good time already, and it's only Monday.
And we have 5 million Arbitron-rated listeners. We're very happy about that. We thank you for your patronage. Here he is to my left and to your right, a powder keg. I know it's waiting to blow today.
Boom.
And I'm ready for it. Here is our friend, Guy Singer, Elston Birdley, atheist. Buzz?
Hi, Don. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Buzz.
Hi.
Anything you'd like to say to anybody?
Not that I can think of. Life is fine as far as I know.
Well, we thought you might be upset with somebody.
Really?
Not that I know of.
Anything different today?
Again, not that I know
of. Anything different? Think. I'm going to ask you to think.
There's nobody in the world you're mad at right now.
No, I don't think so.
Really?
Everything since the time you got up this morning till the time you came here to work, till the time you're sitting in that chair now,
right?
Everything is exactly as it always is.
I know.
No changes, no differences?
As far as I know, everything's good and normal.
Oh, God.
But I guess I haven't heard yet.
No, you... Listen, you know.
Really?
What we are expecting to you... What we are expecting of you...
Uh-huh.
The powder keg we're expecting to blow...
Okay.
You know about it.
We have both experienced it. We have both raved about it.
Wow.
And we were hoping that you'd
join our party today.
Well, I'd like to join if only I knew what it was I was mad about.
Forget it. Just forget it. You know that tape is right. You're just too nice, but just forget it. I guess you don't care that Bretta was in your parking spot today.
Oh, is that whose car it was? See, I didn't know whose car it was.
Oh.
See,
Ben told me the first... I was
me in the parking lot.
As soon as I got out of my car, Ben came over and said, you know... Bretta took Buzz's spot.
He told me to. I didn't know that was Bretta's car. Now I'll know. From time to time, different cars are parked in my spot. And I've gotten into a habit, since I don't have any notes on me or anything, I write in spittle on their windshield, no park here.
Well, Buzz,
so my saliva is already all over her windshield. So that's the venom I have spewed.
Oh, okay. All right. Just forget it.
Okay. Share our
anger. Didn't know who it was.
Thought you'd want to be a member of the posse today,
well,
Buzz.
Yeah. Now that I know, I'd like to strangle her.
Right, well,
no, you wouldn't.
You know,
no, you wouldn't.
Yes, now, you're
would.
Just saying that for us. You
you're
are
saying
just,
that because you're just too nice.
You're just placating us.
This is exactly what the commercial says.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's nice. He won't yell at Bretta because he's nice.
No, I'll yell at her.
All right, that's fine.
That's fine.
I know.
We tried.
I knew it was somebody. I didn't know it was her.
Yeah, yeah.
Know,
of course
she's
it was
nice.
Her.
Sir.
You know, Don and I, it's all we can do not to take sledgehammers and take it to the person's car altogether.
So you kind of, not only do you not become a member of the posse,
yeah.
But in a weird way, you diminish the hatred that we had.
You make it look petty and
yes.
unnecessary.
Yes. No, we were looking for you to validate the fact that we are so small that we screamed relentlessly at this woman for taking our parking
spot. I thought perhaps somebody who didn't know any better had parked there.
No.
I didn't know it was Bretta's car. Now that I know,
no,
amazing but true. Give me that hammer.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you're pissed now, Buzz.
Yeah.
He's
stand
back.
Boy, I can
stand
feel
back.
The heat. I can. Don't get too close to that flame.
Okay, first item of business on today's show, that would be the new telephone number.
We have a new telephone number.
You can call Don and Mike anytime, toll free, at 1-877-365-DMDM. That's 1-877-365-3636. They're ready to believe you.
Really?
I'm not a fan of the DMDM thing. I wish we'd just go with the phone number, which is 1-877-365-3636.
That's the real new phone number, huh?
Yeah.
You can call Don and Mike anytime, toll free, at 1-877-365-DMDM. That's 1-877-365-3636. They're ready to believe you.
This isn't some kind of trick designed especially for me, is it?
No, new phone number, Mike.
Hmm.
New phone number. And look, see, the phones weren't ringing. When we were yelling at Buzz about not yelling at Brother.
Right.
Now the phones are ringing.
We have a brand new phone number.
Hello, Don and Mike Show.
And that was somebody who was
there
just testing
go.
It.
Working great.
There you go.
What is it again?
It's,
You can call Don and Mike anytime, toll free, at 1-877-365-DMDM. 1-877-365-3636. They're ready to believe you.
It's 1-877-365-3636.
Right.
Oh. And at the same time, our hotline is ringing. Now, that number is unlisted. Hello?
Hello, this is MCI WorldCom with a collect call from Jimmy. Will you accept the charges?
Yes, of course.
Thank you for using 1-800-COLLECT.
He's got timing, doesn't he? Hey, man.
Hey, dude.
Hey, man, of course.
Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, everybody.
What's going on?
It's my redneck brother, Jim.
Oh, man.
Why?
Oh, have I got the story for you.
Uh-oh. Really?
Yeah, I need to talk to you just for a second off the air, though.
Oh, really?
Oh, my.
Oh, my. All right. Hold on a second.
Oh, dear.
All right. Well, Buzz, I guess we're going to have to pad for a second here.
We can do that.
Maybe I could try again to get you to work
Hello?
Up some of your dander
hey,
about
oh.
Bretta in the parking
yeah.
space. But
now that I know it's her, I really am pissed, and I really
yeah.
am. While we've been sitting here, I've been plotting ugly ways
Why,
to get
happened?
Even with Bretta.
Glad we could clear that up. But I'll tell you right now,
right.
when Jim asked to speak to his brother
mm-hmm.
in private off the air,
yeah.
you know that there is something seriously, seriously wrong.
It can't be good. This is what I'm thinking.
But there's got to be some of it that's going to be, you know, on the air. And I know we can look forward to hearing some part of this.
Okay. Just a taste.
On the air, but okay. just a little
right.
taste.
Right.
So what's going on?
All right, I need the soap opera music.
Oh, really? Is this another relationship?
No, it's about my parents and him.
Oh.
I need the soap opera music.
They did something again?
Yeah. Yeah, they sure did.
Oh. They did something bad again?
They sure did.
Oh, dear.
You know, my brother wants to know if it's cool to talk about it on the radio.
And, you know, for goodness sakes, with all the crap that we've discussed about our family on the air.
Sure.
You know, what is one more log on the fire?
Why not?
All right,
oh,
Jimmy.
Oh, man.
Okay. Where are you at right now?
Barkeysville, Pennsylvania.
Right, so you're driving a load of something somewhere, right?
Yeah, I'm overloaded big time, too.
You're overloaded. Well, that's good for any of the state troopers that might be listening.
Well, I gotta be going around a few scales, too.
Really? Well, we'll deal with that in just a moment. Now, here's the latest. Now, this involves your girlfriend, right?
Yeah.
The girlfriend that my mom and dad didn't want my brother to see. Now, keep in mind, my brother's 38 years old.
Now, is there some particular reason why they don't want you seeing this woman, Jimmy?
Just that they can't control me anymore. They can't tell me when to do anything or how to do it or anything. They can't control me.
And they're
upset. That's the whole point of it, completely, totally, 100%.
So you remember that my parents, in the last episode of My Dysfunctional Family, my parents had actually hired a private investigator.
Oh, man, I found out Saturday that not only did they hire a private detective to drive by my house, the private detective followed Jamie. Plus, they gave Sam and Fran a complete report, a lifelong history report on Jamie.
Let me bring you up to speed. Jamie is my brother's current girlfriend, and Sam and Fran would be our parents.
I have a valid question here, and this is for people that might not be familiar with this. You said they can't control you, but you're a guy that's been married, you have a kid, you've been in many relationships, and have they ever pulled anything like this with any of the other relationships?
No, the only thing they've done before is just tell me that they don't think my girlfriend or my wife was worth anything. They thought that, you know, they weren't good. They didn't like them. They've never liked anybody that I have been with.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I just want to say, this is a Monday episode of the show, okay?
That's, you know, right there.
It's only Monday, and already we're getting it.
Right there. I mean, no surprise for anybody who listens to the show. That's just not right. You know what I mean?
Right, no.
You kind of have to accept whoever your kid brings in. I mean, that's just the way it is. You get to support them, and that's the way it is.
When your kid is 38 years old.
Absolutely.
And you've already got a bad relationship with both of your kids.
Of course.
Right. All right, so well, what's the latest installment?
Well, we saw Sam and Fran Saturday morning.
And how did that happen?
Well, we saw Francis.
That's my mother.
And they have had a friend of theirs drive by Jamie's house now, okay, Saturday morning. So Jamie said, stop the car, I want to talk to your mom. So I stopped the car and I said, Jamie, just be cool.
Now, wait a minute. When you said they had a friend drive by the house, was mom in the car?
No, this was Bob's wife, Dawn. They're good friends now.
Yeah, so your friend Bob is good friends with our mom and dad.
Yeah, I've lost that relationship, that friendship, after 18 years.
Oh, my God.
Because of all this.
So this is a contemporary of yours who has kind of been reporting to your parents about your life?
Exactly.
How twisted is that?
Does this have anything to do with the thing that you were telling me last week? Well, we talked last week off the radio. Occasionally, we do talk off the radio.
Right.
The thing with Bob, the problem with Bob last week.
Yeah.
My brother was all upset. He called me last week. And this guy, Bob, has been my brother's friend since they, you know, were just out of high school. And he said, listen, I'm not friends with Bob anymore. And, you know, I said, what? Bob's your best friend. And it just turns out there was a whole big situation with Bob. Was that related to Sam and Fran, too?
Yes.
Oh, my God. And, my parents are a mess.
Anyway. Jamie got out of the car, and Francis was standing there, and Jamie said, Mrs. Source, I'd just like to tell you not to have your friends drive by my house.
Now, wait, hold on. Where was Mom at this? Because you said that this other person was driving past your girlfriend's house. Where did Mom appear?
We saw her downtown South Lloyd.
So this is after a friend drove by the house to check up on you.
Yes.
And then your girlfriend bumped into your mother downtown.
Yes, and I was with my girlfriend.
And you're, okay, so you're with
her. I was sitting in the car, and Jamie got out and told Francis, hey, I'd appreciate if you would keep your friends away from my house and have your friends stop driving by my house.
Right.
And Francis says, oh, well, your mother hooked up the phone at Jim's house in her name. That's fraud. Ameritech is going to prosecute you and all this. And Jamie says, my mom did it for a gift for me. And Francis started saying, we did a whole investigation on you. Jim, you should see what's in this investigation. The only thing Jamie has ever done in her whole life,
oh my God,
has gotten a speeding ticket and didn't pay for it.
That's it.
Okay, you should see this. So Jamie tells Francis, you're just an old, lonely woman. Leave us alone.
Oh, my God.
Francis hauls off and hits her right in the face.
Oh, my God. Was this on the streets?
Yeah. So I told Jamie, I told Jamie, car. I said, said, Jamie, get in the car. We're going down to the police department right now. I said, Francis, you're busted.
Oh, my
you
God.
You just committed battery on Jamie.
Oh, no. So did you file charges against Mother?
We went down and talked to this Sergeant Lee. Jamie didn't want to file charges. We could have had Francis arrested for battery. She would have had to been shipped down to Winnebago County Jail, pay a bond, and get a court date.
Oh, my God.
Jamie says, I don't want that because it's just going to bring more crap down on you. Well, I said, you do what you want. I said, we can have her, this old bag, arrested. Or the cop says, well, I can go over and talk to her. Well, the police officer went to talk to Francis, and Bob was there.
This is my brother's estranged friend,
Bob. Bob tells the police officer, well, Jamie's driving on a stolen registration, a stolen sticker, and stolen license plate. And Francis says, oh, I'm not doing anything to them. They came and saw me. And the officer said, well, Mrs. Source, just leave them alone and they will leave you alone. Well, then I called LaVita.
This is my Aunt LaVita. My mother's sister, Aunt LaVita.
Right. LaVita is neutral. Remember we had our doubt last week about that?
Yes.
LaVita is neutral.
All right.
She didn't believe it that Francis is like this and all whacked out. Okay? And I talked to LaVita Saturday afternoon for 2 hours over the phone.
Just let me interrupt you for a moment. I follow this because this is my family.
You got to start feeling pretty good about the fact that you live all these miles away.
Is this understandable to anybody listening to the radio? I mean, I guess if you listen over the year, you know who all the players and the sort
right,
of best
sure,
are.
Right, sure. Yeah. Well, anyway, it's funny, man. I mean, this is just whacked out. I'm moving out to Seattle, Washington when I can.
Oh, No, don't tell me.
That's a good move.
I thought you wanted to be by your daughter.
I do, but... Do I have to live in fear that Sam and Fran are going to try and make my life miserable any time they get a chance, and then I have to sit back and defend myself or prove myself innocent?
Oh, my God.
That's what it's coming down to, okay? So Bob lied about Jamie's registration. So we spent Saturday afternoon going to the police department in Beloit. The police department, the cop called to let us know what Francis said. He says, oh, yeah, by the way, they said you're driving on a stolen plate. I have South Beloit police officers looking for your car because now you are under suspicion. So we spent Saturday afternoon running around from police department to police department to have them run a check on her plates to prove that she's all legal.
Did he get that done? Was that finally worked out? We got that done.
Good. But then now, Francis, I left yesterday at noon to come out to New York State, and Francis and Sam are driving by the house.
Oh, my God. Again?
LaVita didn't believe me on this, and I told LaVita, I said, hey, I got a tape recording, and I recorded Francis a month ago, and how whacked out she was, calling Jamie a whore, calling Jamie every name in the book. And LaVita doesn't believe it. And I said, as soon as I find this tape, I will be over to your house. And she believes me now. She's starting to see how Francis and Sam are. See, they always want to portray to everybody that they're innocent, they are perfect, they do everything they can for their son.
My parents, I mean by my adopted parents here, they are certifiably out of their friggin' minds. I mean, they're absolutely...
Once they pushed you away, they moved on to your brother and started working on him.
Right, because I reached the point with my parents. My mom and dad got mad at me. This all goes back to the fact that my brother and I are adopted, and things were fine with our parents. I mean, we had a screwy home life like everybody does, but it was all right.
Right.
We found out we were adopted, and the second we asked our parents about it, they started getting squirrely with us.
Sure.
And then my mom and dad sent me a box one day that had, like, all of my baby pictures and my high school football letter and all the stuff from when I was a kid. They just sent it all to me and said, goodbye, you're not our son anymore.
Well, they'll probably do that to me. You know the thing about uncle / half-brother Tom?
And that, of course, is the other great part of the story, that my uncle is actually my half-brother.
Right.
I told LaVita Saturday, too. I said, hey, you know, she still denies that to this day. She goes, well, I didn't know that was a secret in the family. I said, what do you mean, Aunt LaVita? That was top secret. I said, Tom told me, Francette told me, Sam told me. And Francis still denies it. She goes, oh, yeah, Tom is your mother's real son.
You see, my mother... Okay, my brother and I are adopted.
She's whacked, man.
My mother gave birth to Tom.
Right.
My mother then, this is before my brother and I were even born, my mother gave birth to Tom. She gave that baby to her mother to raise.
Right.
When he was 12 years old.
And it's like a big secret in the family that apparently everybody in the whole family knew, except for my brother and I,
right,
that the guy that we had been brought up with as Uncle Tom was actually Brother Tom.
But was it her? Was it her son with
it was
with
her
Sam?
Son? No, it was her son with another guy.
Another guy.
He was married before.
Oh,
right.
And he got killed in a typhoon in World War II.
Of course.
Off the coast of Japan.
I'm telling you, I swear to God, you can't write this crap.
Pretty amazing stuff.
And you know, this is why when I talked about this 5 years ago, why the Jenny Jones Show and the Lisa Gibbons Show called me up and asked me if I could get my whole family to come on their shows, and I said absolutely not.
Oh,
this,
oh God.
This is my
better than General
health.
Hospital.
This is my personal hell.
But,
so,
you know, it's just whacked. And now they're trying to do everything they can.
I don't know why they just
vandalize my life, my job, Jamie's job.
Jim, this is Buzz. Rather than move, can you get a restraining order?
That Jamie went to check on it today.
Good.
$122 to get a restraining order on Sam and Fran.
Right.
And then it's another $122 to get a restraining order on Bob and Dawn.
Oh, don't worry. I'll pay that for you.
The saddest thing, you know, out of all this...
Who'll pay that for me?
I'll pay that for you. Me, your brother.
Oh, man, I'd appreciate it.
You know, the saddest thing out of all this sounds to me, Jim, like your lifelong friend who kind of buys into what they're saying.
He was my hunting buddy. Well, I told my brother what the story was with that. And now he's mad because I confronted Jamie about these lies, and I found out that his wife was lying about it. He told me all this stuff and didn't want me to talk to Jamie about it.
There's so much crap to this story. There's so many people lying to other people. And I guess it's all intertwined to Sam and Fran.
Yeah. Man, we take 5 hours to explain it to everybody.
We couldn't do it in 5 hours. Not to explain everything. I swear to God we couldn't.
You know, but, man, I mean, this has got me so upset. This is the first thing I've ate in 2 days here.
I feel the same way I felt when Dom was going through all the crap initially. I mean, it's just horrible. It's really horrible.
Listen, I had it bad. My mom never slapped my girlfriend or my wife.
You have the distance on your side. You have the distance factor.
Jesus Christ. What a
mess
that is.
I was afraid that Jamie was going to throw her in a headlock and do a body slam to her. You know?
You know, I would pay to see that whole situation unfold. I really would pay to see that. Where was that?
When I told Francis, I told Jamie, I said, get in the car, Jamie. We're going down to the police department. Francis, all that skin hanging off of her arms and stuff was just shaking like a bowl of jelly. She was scared to death.
Okay. All right. Well, listen.
But it was...
Listen, call me tonight. I'll get you the money for the restraining order.
Yeah, I needed to ask you another favor.
All right. Go ahead.
I don't know if you want me to say this over there.
Oh, right. Come on. Why not?
Hold on a second.
We were right. It wasn't good.
Unreal.
All right. What else?
Hey, it makes you appreciate everything you got.
It really does.
It does.
Yeah.
That's a shame. That's a shame.
They did this to... You remember when they did this to Don?
I do. They shot
years ago, and now they're doing it to Jimmy.
Hold on a second.
Send all this baby stuff back in boxes.
Yes. Yes. Oh, of course I can handle that for you. Are you there?
I'm here.
Hello? Yeah. No problem.
Because, man, this has got to end.
Yeah. He wants to know if one of my battery of attorneys will send a letter on his behalf from him to my parents saying to leave him alone.
You know the attorney to call for that.
To never contact me or my daughter. I've already told my daughter that she's not going to see him anymore. And Rachel says, why? Because they've moved to Europe.
Oh, my God. That's what I had to do with my parents. I had to finally get a lawyer.
You know, and I hold a friend that they have in Washington that sends them all this stuff and calls them and tells them all the scoop on us. I hope she's listening.
I had to finally hire a lawyer to send my parents a letter saying, if you contact him again, we will take swift legal action against you.
Amazing.
Well, once I did that, they left me alone.
Good.
They stopped trying to butt in. All right, Jimmy. Well, I'll help you on all those fronts.
Well, you want me to call you tonight?
Yeah, call me tonight.
What time?
You don't want to get home. Just call me anytime tonight. Okay?
All right, dude.
All right. Well, hang in there, man.
Yeah, I'm going to try.
Hang in there. I love you.
I love you, too.
All right.
Hang in there, Jim. Good luck with all this. It's an awful lot to deal with.
Don't speed.
But I know I speak on behalf of all of our listeners when I say it's highly entertaining. And, you know, thank you for sharing it with us.
You know, I don't know. Thanks for letting me get it off my chest.
That's all right. No better place than a radio show with 5 million people.
Hey, the therapy. Isn't it your favorite therapy?
Yes, it is.
Right here?
There's no doubt about it.
This is my therapy, too.
All right. Call me tonight.
Okay.
All right. Bye, dude.
Bye.
Bye. Between Jimmy and you, you worked in the radio business for years, and I think you could handle this. You knew what pathological liars were all about. But Jimmy, I don't know, man. That's tough.
Yeah.
That is tough.
How screwed up is that?
That is amazing.
I'm so embarrassed of my family. I'm so embarrassed by all of that going on.
Yeah, I mean,
oh, Christ.
I think you're both handling it the right way. I've always said that. You've risen above it.
How wacky is that? My parents are so out of their minds.
That is tough. That is a tough situation.
You know, just leave us the hell alone.
Yeah, I mean, you handled it the right way. They left you alone, and now he's just got to, you know, make the break,
right? Right. And, you know, none of this would have happened with my parents if when we had gone and originally asked them if we were adopted, if they would have just said, yes, you're adopted.
Right.
Here's the circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we never went to our parents and said, oh, you're not our real parents. We want to find out all about us. We didn't
right.
know that.
Right.
We just wanted to know what happened. And my parents refused to give it up. At one point, I was screaming at my mother. I said, don't you watch Oprah? Like, on Oprah, they have shows now
sure.
that instruct stupid people how to handle situations like this. And my parents said, well, you know why we never told you were adopted? I said, why? She said, you never asked.
Oh, God.
That was the big response. You never asked.
Mm.
Okay. Thank you. But anyway.
Yeah.
Happy Monday, everybody.
Happy Monday. Yeah.
Happy Monday.
I think that did Jimmy a little good, getting on the radio and talking about it.
No,
I think one of the reasons he did want, whoever that person is, that's, you know, that's the spy here in Washington, D.C., wanted him to hear it.
Okay, that's effed up, man.
That yeah. is effed up.
That's just real effed
Amazing.
Up.
Amazing.
There is.
All right, let's check our phone lines to see if our new phone number works, okay?
What is that phone number? I forgot.
It's 1-877-365-3636.
Let's try a call.
Hello, Don and Mike Show.
Don and Mike, you're the greatest.
Ah, the phone lines work, Mike.
1-877-365-3636.
Right, let's just stay away from that stupid DMDM.
DMDM.
365-3636. 1-877. Yes, hello, who is this?
This is Eric from Sacramento.
Yeah, hi, Eric.
Don and Mike, you're the greatest. It was up to Sacramento, Las Vegas style show. Just wanted to encourage Jimmy to stay in the area because, as it turns out, it's his daughter that's set up to be hurt the worst on this if he moves to Washington to get away from your silly parents.
Yeah, I know. I'll have that discussion with him.
It'd be great if you could pay for that restraining order.
Oh, I'll do it. That's done. Not a problem. Hello, Don and Mike show.
Hi, guys.
Hello there.
How are you today?
You know, I have nothing on the screen, so I don't know who you are or where you're calling from.
Amy from Detroit.
Yeah.
And when they did, they took the cough syrup with them.
By 1 o'clock the next day, Elvis wasn't up. Sonny banged on the door. When Elvis didn't answer, he went inside. It was like a meat locker in there. Elvis was sprawled across the bed lengthways, and his breathing was erratic. Sonny freaked out and went and got Hamburger James.
Get James in here. Elvis is OD.
Took a while, but eventually they got Elvis up and slapped him back to consciousness. Then he took some Ritalin and came out of it.
Okay, hey, like morning.
Wow.
Sunday.
The girl was another story. She was in worse shape. They couldn't slap her awake. Hey, slap that girl awake.
Come on now.
And give me 5 hot fudge sundaes.
And some cookies. And then we'll be energized.
Sunday said she was dying right there in front of him.
Oh, no, man.
They phoned Dr. Kaplan and he came up and called an ambulance. He was shocked at how far gone she was, and he warned him that she probably wouldn't make it. She was already turning blue.
Oh.
Elvis was telling him what to do. Elvis said, just give her a shot of Ritalin, Doc. She'll pop out of it.
Yeah, give her a sundae.
I think everybody was disgusted by that. But he used to just hand out Ritalin tablets to all of us. Elvis just used Ritalin like he was nuts. Elvis just used Ritalin like he was nuts. Elvis was just Ritalin nuts.
I'm just Ritalin nuts. Give me some more, man.
He always thought no matter how bad you got, that's all you needed.
I just go nuts for Ritalin.
They pumped the girl's stomach and hooked her up to life support. Elvis just waved it off. I told her not to drink so much of the syrup. And he went in the bedroom and called Colonel Parker.
Yeah. to make sure the Palm Springs police stayed out of it.
Keep them out of it, man.
And then it didn't hit the papers. They came up with this plan that if she did die, Charlie from Elvis's Mafia would take the rap. He'd say she was his date, and he'd given her the cough syrup.
Yeah, man, it was my date.
Well, something like 17 hours later, the girl came to.
Hey, miracle, miracle. Sundays!
Charlie and Sonny went to the hospital, and Sonny said when he touched her arm, she came halfway off the bed and started hissing at him like a wild animal.
Ooh, settle down, girl.
Scared the S out of him. The doctor said she was suffering from oxygen deprivation to the brain. Elvis paid her hospital bill.
Here you go, honey.
And he had Joe get in touch with her mom and offer her money.
She's all right, man. You want some money?
But they would never take anything. They said they'd never sue. They loved Elvis.
Yeah.
And didn't want to hurt his image.
Oh, man, it was just a big misunderstanding. You can understand that.
Incredible!
Yeah, John Papa. Oh, come on. I have some cough syrup.
Thank you for not suing me.
I really appreciate that. Would you like some Ritalin? How about some of my Attack?
Okay, Mike, it's your turn to pick the next story.
I'd love to.
Here are your topics. They are Elvis and baby talk.
Okay.
Elvis shoots toilet and ice maker.
I love that one.
Elvis's Graceland bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
That pleases me greatly.
That pleases me greatly. Is that the one where he actually pretends he's a swami?
Yeah.
That's my favorite.
That's the one you want. It pleases me greatly.
Is where he brings the kid back to life or something like that?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's an all-time favorite.
I'm a very, very powerful Elvis with my swami hat.
It's coming next as we continue our tribute to Elvis Presley. In self-realization, they teach you that some people have the gift of healing. And, of course, a lot of people say it's fraud, but who's to say if it's real or not?
Right on, man.
All Elvis knew is sometimes he had these readings and studies on people. Elvis got to be believing it. Hey, maybe it's possible. So Elvis got to experiment. In 1973, Sonny and Judy's little boy, Brian, got a real high fever. He was a year old, and they were worried. Well, Elvis decided he'd do the laying on hands trip and rip that fever right out of the kid. He went over to Sonny's house with his big green scarf because he said green was a healing color. And he put on this goddamn turban, if you can believe it.
Oh, some swami, man.
With some kind of fake jewel in it. Elvis looked like Alibaba. Elvis laid Brian down on the cloth. And then went into this effing lotus position and meditated. And he said all this mumbo jumbo and told Brian to concentrate on letting his fever pass into Elvis's hands.
Mecca lecca high, mecca honey ho.
The kid's a year old, keep in mind. Elvis started working on him, and Brian got fixated on that fake stone and reached up to snatch it off Elvis's turban. Elvis yelled at him, "Don't do that, Brian." The kid was ruining Elvis' show.
Stop it, kid.
Elvis put his hands on both sides of Brian's head and his solar plexus and mumbled all this crap about the fever traveling through his arms and out.
Oh, bad fever traveling to me, Elvis Presley, and I will be energized.
Then he said, "I think the boy's fever is starting to break." Sonny put his hand on Brian's forehead. He was hot as ever. But Sonny said, "Yeah, Elvis, I think you're right." The next day, Brian was a lot better. His fever was down, but hell, his mom and dad had given him medicine. Sonny called Elvis and gave him the good news. And Elvis said, "Good. That pleases me greatly. Call me if there's any change."
That pleases me. I am the Swami healing Elvis. I believe I can perform miracles.
I love that. All right, how about Elvis's deodorant tablet?
Ah, yeah, he loved those.
You know, Elvis thought a pill cured everything. Dr. Nick says he got psychologically hooked on some kind of Swedish herb he took to cleanse the body so he wouldn't have to take a bath. What I remember best is Elvis's love of chlorophyll pills. He showed me one time. I said, "Elvis, what the F is this?" He said, "You take a couple of these 3 times a day and you never have to take a bath. It cleans your whole body." I said, "Elvis, there ain't such a damn pill. What happens? You take it and you break out a lather and wash yourself? What are you talking about?" Elvis got so goddamn mad, it made no sense. He said, "You ought to try it." I said, "F no. They're called Nulo Deodorant Tablets. A little company down in Jacksonville, FLA, makes them. Linda introduced him to them, and he pursued it thereafter. Linda took them to keep down her menstrual odor.
Oh, God.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, man, here, take a couple of these. Your odor does not please me greatly.
But Elvis took them because he thought they would take care of his body odor. Actually, the box says they're for control of body odors, including odor due to problems of bowel control and colostomy.
Oh, dear.
They're sold over the counter, but Linda used to fly to New York to get them. Elvis and Linda took them like candy pills, real dark green. And they took them by mouth. Elvis thought they would kill any type of body odor from bad breath to smelly butt.
Yeah, a smelly butt. Here, take a chlorophyll tablet.
He spent underarm odor. Hell, he ordered bottles of them. And that was his bath. I'd say Elvis got bad about bathing from 1974 on.
Oh, man. There's no need, man. I have already taken a pill that pleases me greatly.
We never really smelled Elvis's body odor. Until the later years.
Oh, yeah, man, because you forgot to take the pills when they were filling up his water bottles.
Buzz, I'll give you a choice here for the last story.
Oh, good.
You can either have Elvis's early drug use.
Uh-huh.
Elvis at the morgue.
Right.
Flash bulbs in the pool.
Uh-huh.
Elvis's dirty home movies.
Right.
TCB. Elvis and baby talk. Elvis shoots toilet maker and ice maker.
It's a tough choice so far between the flash bulbs and the homemade X-rated movies.
Well, I've also got Elvis's constipation.
Oh.
Elvis's hallucinations. Elvis and football. And the sexually retarded Elvis.
Let's go with the sexually retarded Elvis.
I haven't heard the sexually retarded Elvis.
Yeah.
Oh, you've heard it. It's about the killing the babies.
Oh, that's right.
That's what the story is. Elvis was curiously inept in certain basic social ways. Elvis is so retarded, remarked one of his early girlfriends, who came up to Graceland regularly, dressed in her nice little tweed skirt with her white blouse, stockings and heels. She didn't go to see Elvis just in blue jeans and a t-shirt. And all of Elvis's girls dressed the same. The guys were more aggressive. They scored because the girl always had the idea that eventually she would get to Elvis if she had sex with them. Elvis himself had nothing to say. If Scatter the Monkey hadn't been there, we would have probably sat there all night looking at each other. Elvis's monkey became the focus of attention.
I love Scatter. He is my fine monkey, if he pleases me.
All the conversation was centered on the activities of Elvis's monkey. One time, Elvis took a friend out of the room and made out on a couch upstairs. It was like heavy petting. He got totally aroused, and all of a sudden, he messed all over his pants. He got embarrassed and said, "Oh, my God, look at all the babies we killed." I'll never forget that statement. If he got involved with a girl on a casual basis and she put out real quick and went to bed with him, I don't think he'd see her again, because that meant she was a bad girl.
Ah.
I don't know any of my girlfriends who had sex with him. A lot of them made out with him, but they didn't go to bed with him. And one...
We all got the creepy crud, man.
Yeah. And one who was the ultimate good girl, she came from a Catholic family and was one of the few virgins in town. She spent the night with Elvis all the time, but remained totally virginal because he respected her.
That's right, man. Don't touch her.
Few of these girls knew about Elvis's two-way mirror he had installed in the swimming pool cabana that served as a ladies' dressing room. They had originally gotten a smaller version for Elvis's house, where they used it in the den for shows put on by the guys and their unsuspecting dates. The only way to gain access to the new one was by crawling under the house. Elvis and the boys took that as part of the game.
God.
Come on, man, crawl under the house. We're going to see a great show. I am energized.
On Sunday afternoon, all the girls came over to watch them play football in the little park on Beverly Glen off Sunset, 5 minutes from the house. They'd play a half dozen games in a row, two or three touchdowns. Elvis's team always won. They played against teams made up of other young actors like Pat Boone, Bob Conrad, Ricky Nelson, and Elvis' team included Red and Sonny and the rest of the guys, and ringers like Max Bayer Jr., star of the Beverly Hillbillies. Elvis always played quarterback, throwing himself into the fray with genuine abandon, but taking the game utterly too serious, diagramming elaborate plays for his team.
Do a button hook and roll to your right, man.
Following developments of the NFL religiously and deeming it a sport but was a gift from the gods.
Yes, man, I love my football. Much better than I like Robert Goulet.
And then this goes past Elvis and sex. Like, it gets into Elvis's love of football.
There's so much, and it all ties together. What about Elvis at the morgue?
I'll give you that one. Yeah. The last one, Mike. Elvis at the morgue. Okay. This is a story about Elvis's friend, Junior, who's dead. Elvis was extremely hurt by Junior's dying. He took a lot of the blame on himself for not providing more for the family or giving them more opportunities. But the most peculiar part about this was when Junior died, Elvis became obsessed with knowing what death was like.
What is death like, man?
Junior was at the Memphis funeral home, and Elvis wanted to go see and touch his body. We went up there at 3 or 4 a.m. The door was locked, but a guy let us in the back way. We went on up and viewed the body and all, and Elvis started talking about death. And he said, "Hey, let's ease on back and see how they do this." We went on back through the little hallways. It was dark as hell, except for a little green light in the back corner. We went around, we saw lots of lights, and we passed through, we heard this noise. It was hard to tell what it was. We went into the room where they display the caskets. Elvis looked at me, and I looked at him, and we had our eyes wide open. It was kind of comical. The sound was a ways down the hall, and it was a heck of a noise.
I sure am scared.
When we got down there, it got darker.
It's a creepy place, man.
And the noise got louder.
They had dead bodies in here, Bill.
Elvis stopped. I was so glad he did. He looked at me and said, "Did you hear that?" I said, "Yes, I don't want to hear it anymore. Let's get out of here, Elvis." Elvis said, "Don't go yet. Let's see what's going on around here." We went on back, and Elvis saw a mortician. There were two on duty that night. One was working, the other was laying there in one of those caskets sleeping.
Oh, man.
That's what the noise was. And the other guy in the back room had rock and roll music on. We thought it would be cold in there, and this wild-eyed person would come out. But he was a normal guy. And when he saw it was Elvis, he said, "Can I help you?" And Elvis said, "Maybe you know me. I'm Elvis Presley."
You might know me, and if you do, that would please me greatly.
"You've got my dead cousin Junior here, and I'm fascinated by this." And the mortician said, "But Elvis, you're not supposed to be here." But he was beside himself that Elvis was there, so of course he talked for a while. I looked around and saw a couple of bodies with sheets over them. I was spooked. And damn if I didn't back up into one of the carts that had a body on it. When them cold feet hit me, man, I damn near jumped through the ceiling. I said, "Holy mackerel." Oh! I was ready to run.
Man, nightmares.
I wasn't as brave or fascinated as Elvis was.
I'm a brave man.
It didn't sit well with me.
Could I see the way you cut up the corpses?
But they talked for a few minutes more. And Elvis started touching the dead bodies.
Look at that, man. It's cold.
And was asking the mortician all kinds of questions.
Man, I say I'm hungry after a night at the morgue.
Elvis went to the morgue 3 more times through the years. Usually when somebody he had known had passed away. He wanted to know a little bit more about the morgue every time.
I am fascinated with death.
Wow. When it came out in Red and Sonny's book, Elvis, What Happened, that Elvis liked to go to the morgue, people thought he was a damn freak.
Yeah, freaks would carry your luggage up to the room.
And I can see that, where you might think that. It's creepy. But part of it was Elvis's southern upbringing. What does being brought up in the South have to do with wanting to touch dead people in a morgue?
This was written by someone who is kissing my ass, man. And that pleases me greatly.
Elvis was just trying to bridge the gap and hold on a little longer.
I agree. That's all it was, man. Now, come on, everybody. Ice cream sundaes for everybody. I am energized.
Where's my attacks, man?
Set them up there, kitchen. This is Elvis Aaron Presley.
8. Fill my bottles. Get my attacks. And I'd like 4 scoops of ice cream and 12 cookies.
Amen.
Okay, that's probably
the greatest honor that I've ever had in my life.
I agree, Elvis.
You know, that's it, and we never even got to the Hamburger James story.
No, but Elvis keeps on giving, and someday we'll have to examine the face cloth with his own urine.
Mm. We never got to that on today's show.
That's right.
We also never got to the tape of Elvis where he's up on stage talking about the maternity suit.
No, didn't do that either. paternity suit, of course. Elvis calls it a maternity suit.
It's a maternity suit that's been filed against me, man.
Okay, listen. We'd continue with this, however. Buzz,
yes?
Who's very angry about Brett stealing his parking places today, is almost nearly as angry now that we haven't gone to news and comment.
Furious. Now, you were telling me earlier that you walked over to her, right?
I haven't talked to Brett yet. I did leave her a note on her desk, and she needed to borrow my parking space, and she's needed to borrow it from time to time, so today I borrowed her desk.
Oh!
What do you mean?
Well, I had to use her desk for a while. I'm not sure I got everything quite back the way it was.
Oh, naughty boy.
Right, Buzz. You're such a JD.
Such a juvenile delinquent, Buzz.
What'd you do, like take one pencil and move it from the left of the desk to the right?
No, there were these, I don't know, files and contracts and stuff, and I don't know, I just sort of, you know, stacked them all up together, and
I can't spray paint. He wrote, Buzz!
I don't know if I got them all back there. I also did leave a memo on her desk.
Rob, go look at her desk.
In permanent ink.
Go tell me something. Don't tell me how messy that desk is.
I didn't want to do any real...
Because
she didn't do any damage to me. I just wanted to inconvenience her the same way she has repeatedly inconvenienced
You want to be one of the bad boys. You just can't do it, Buzz. You just can't do it.
I like to be firm, but fair.
That's right.
We love you the way you are. What is your lead story on the news and comments tonight, Buzz?
Well, we've got lots of great Elvis stuff this evening, but our lead story tonight is back to school, back to books, and back to guns.
Oh, God.
All right, let's get an update here from Rob Spiewak.
For a second, Brett. Buzz does look like he messed it up a little bit. Brett is here right now.
Uh-huh.
She has to have her phone back, and I will shortly. She's there's written in Sharpie on the desk memo, don't park in Buzz's space. There's papers on the floor, but I can't tell if they were already there or not. I don't get the impression this is a neat desk to begin with.
Right.
A couple stacks here and there. Certainly not a federal disaster area, but it ain't neat either.
All right, thank you. Rob, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate Buzz's job of vandalism?
Whenever you write on permanent ink on a desk, that's a locked-in 7 right there.
A 7.
I'll give it an 8.
An 8.
Wow.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Some of those files and contracts may not be in the same order they were before.
Gotcha.
Robert Spiewak, 8.
Gotcha. See you, Boys Town Buzz.
That's right.
We'll be back with news and comments right after this.
To be honest, like a Jeremy Coleman.
You know, real sniveling little backbiting rat.
Be very careful what you say to him.
He's now backpedaling about a comment he made about gays. Some weeks back, he said something about we're very lucky in the Republican Party that we don't have the support of gays and lesbians, and in trying to clarify that over the weekend, he said that he thought that what he really meant to say was that gays and lesbians are very intelligent voters and that the Democrats are lucky to have them.
Way to
try to recover on that one.
This is Elvis Presley. On behalf of all gay voters, I am insulted by that comment.
That's right, because you are 90% gay, as we determined earlier.
It's gone up, Mike, 98%
gay. Wow. I'm about to thank that woodshop teacher for the lunch money.
That's where it started.
Look at all the babies we've killed. I'm so gay. Hi, folks. This is Elvis Presley. 8.
Warren Beatty is as serious as ever about running for president, but Jerry Springer is out of the Ohio Senate race. Springer says he won't be running for U.S. Senate because of his current contractual obligations. The former mayor of Cincinnati turned talk show host was considered a favorite in the race, and he held his own against the Chicago City Council earlier this year. But quoting one Democratic official, Jerry would have been a great candidate.
Incredible!
Yeah, John Pop loves him.
Most of the planned activities are over, but thousands of people are still in Memphis to remember the death of Elvis Presley. Presley died on this date 22 years ago, and 21 years ago, the annual pilgrimage began with music and tours and the big event, the Candlelight Vigil. A spokeswoman for the Presley estate says...
Elvis was gay. Don told me.
It started at 9 p.m. and it went until about 4 this morning. It's when the fans and everyone that would like walk up to the gravesite with candles and they just walk back down with soft Elvis music playing. And it was about 6,000 people came out for that.
They light their candles on Elvis's eternal flame.
Idiots.
There at the grave.
Save this candle forever.
One woman...
What do you mean I cannot take it on the plane?
This is the man they worship. Right here. This is why they're lighting their eternal flame.
Old MacDonald had a farm. E-I-E-I-O. And on that farm he had some chicks. E-I-E-I-O. The cluck cluck here, cluck cluck there, loud as they could be. And when those chicks got out of line, we could see. With cluck cluck here, cluck cluck there, loud as they could be. And when those chicks got out of line, chicken fricassee.
One woman.
I'm energized now. I'm so energized.
That's the best ice cream I've ever had. Let's go play racquetball.
One woman prepared for the somber ceremony by getting the words "Return to Sender" tattooed on her arm.
Incredible!
She says it's her 11th Elvis tattoo.
Oh, yeah, we saw lots of those people when we used to go down there.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, baby. Time out, bud.
All right. We got to get caught up with Spock, and then we'll be right back.
This is Cookie.
France's transportation minister says he is scandalized.
I do not care if he sang the song Poison Ivy. He cannot get on this airplane.
Because we are France and we hate everybody.
Friendly Air France. Police in Cambridge, Massachusetts are apologizing for saying that members of some ethnic groups are less susceptible to pepper spray.
You're not going to believe this.
In a training session, officers listed Mexican-Americans, Pakistanis, and Louisiana's Cajuns among those less affected by pepper spray.
Ooh, boy, that pepper spray sure is good.
All three groups feature cayenne pepper in their culinary heritage.
And I find I am not affected by it either.
This is Justin Wilson, man, that pepper spray. Spray a whole bunch right in my eyes. That's good.
And, of course, cayenne is the same ingredient used by police to subdue belligerent suspects. And their pepper...